one of the win column for the Fighting Bills.
Base hit down the left field line. Greg scores.
Who is it? Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins ball near third. This game is over.
Second deck walk off home run. Grand slam, Bryce Harper.
That's what I call hitting season.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 472. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. And coming up, we're going to talk about the Phillies-Braves series that wrapped up over the weekend. Started off great, ended up kind of a stinker. And we'll talk about the momentum. Is there momentum in baseball? I know Justin and Liz talked about momentum on the latest continued success, and it's something we have been looking for this Phillies team to provide over the last few years, some consistency, and once again, it remains elusive. So we'll get into this very maddening Braves-Phillies series and ask some important questions about this baseball team over the course of the next little while. Joining me, as they do every week, my good friends Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. Liz, of course, you know from Yahoo Sports and continued success. You follow her on Twitter, at Liz Rocher. Hi, Liz, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I just watched something that wasn't baseball. I'm feeling excellent.
What did you watch?
I watched an HBO Max show called Legendary.
Okay.
It's about the club ballroom scene. If anyone's interested in it, which I don't believe John is.
Like Studio 54, that kind of thing?
Yes, in a way.
Okay.
It sort of came from that community. Anyway, this show is not about my love for things like drag and ballroom culture. It's apparently about baseball.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. All right.
I could go on for a long time, so it's best that we move on.
All right. We'll move on then. Justin Clue, of course, from Baseball Prospectus, continued success, The Dirty Inning, absolutely hammered with Chris Jones on the Patreon, which, of course, you can get to at patreon.com/hittinseason. Follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, what's up, bud?
I got to tell you, I know this is a pretty common thought these days, but the Phillies did win five games in a row leading up to two losses. And, you know, I'm not saying that this is forgivable. I'm not saying that makes the Saturday night loss especially, you know, any less exhausting than it was. They are still a sloppy, wobbly bunch. But if the Phillies want to lose one game three times instead of three games one time each, I will take that rather than, yeah, the alternative. Also, I have a question. If Hector Neris has a 50% fly ball rate, does that literally mean 50% of half the batted balls he's allowed have been fly balls?
That is correct, I believe. Liz, is that right?
That's,
I think that's right? Half the batted balls are fly balls, right?
It's not fly ball to home run rate.
No.
Is it half of his fly balls are actually fly balls and not home runs?
Half the batted balls he allows are fly balls. And almost 16% of those fly balls are home runs, if I'm looking at his stats. So he has a 50% fly ball rate. And that just kind of floored me for a minute. Because I think that's pretty high for any pitcher, but for your closer,
it's less than ideal.
Like a lot.
Yeah,
it's like a gamble.
Yeah. Because some of those are gonna go over the fence. You know.
What an incredible! That's a good man. That is good of you to pick that out. Like last year, it was 29%, and this year it's 50%. That's absolutely insane. Now he has had a couple of seasons in 17 and 18 where it was like 45%. So and 2014, that was probably not a season where he pitched a whole lot in 2014. One inning in 2014. So we really probably shouldn't count that season. But he's also
got the fourth highest hard hit ball percentage on the Phillies as well. So ooh. I'm just saying this is adding up to be trouble.
Yeah.
We could just add that to the ongoing list of reasons we've had for a number of years for why Hector Neris maybe shouldn't be your closer. I don't know. Maybe.
I'm not even saying he shouldn't be in the bullpen.
No.
I mean, I wouldn't mind if they were like, he's not in the bullpen.
They went a different
way. Okay. Well, you know, whatever. But yeah, maybe just not the closer for a little bit.
I'm fine with him being in the bullpen because he does have great, you know, he has brilliant moments, but when he's not good.
What should I use to brush my teeth tonight? This toothbrush or this lit stick of dynamite? This is tough, but
you're gonna have
to
give it some thought.
The Dynamite does have the word toothbrush written on it, so I guess
I would go with the Dynamite.
Girardi, I got to stick with the role I've already assigned this.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, no, you've been using Dynamite for the last few years, and so I see no reason to switch out the Dynamite you've been using these last few years, so I would just roll with that.
It only blows up half the time. Like,
right, exactly. Exactly. Half the time is... There's half the time it's not blowing up. I mean, you're
half
just looking at this from a negative perspective. So, yeah.
Exactly.
16% of the time you actually die.
You know, it's amazing. You know, he had an ERA under 2, I think, going into that performance on Saturday night. It's still 2.93, his ERA. His strikeouts per 9 is right where it normally is. His walk rate's way down from last year. But, you know, this is... You know, when it happened on Saturday night, when Hector Neris gave up the game tying home run to Pablo Sandoval, he does this at least once or twice every year, and it almost always happens in Atlanta. I got to look up his Atlanta numbers because I got to believe he's got an ERA well over 4 in Atlanta. I'd be shocked if it was any lower than that. Because
Hector gets his ass kicked in Atlanta, and there really shouldn't be, like, if you are a manager who looks at numbers, you know, and respects the numbers in any way, you got to think twice, right? I mean, like, maybe it makes him feel bad that you go with somebody else in Atlanta, but just lie and come up with another reason, or explain to him, hey, guess what? Like, you don't do well here, and I know you want the team to do well, so we're going to, you know, just take a break for a second with you closing out games in Atlanta, because this is getting to be ridiculous, because I have the same questions.
Well, in Turner Field, he had pitched 4 games in Turner Field.
I'm sorry, I just saw the same thing. Atlanta in SunTrust Park. He's got a 7.71
ERA.
Oh my
God,
I just pulled it up. Oh,
16
no.
games in SunTrust Park, a 7.71 ERA, 8 saves, 14 innings, 13 hits allowed, 12 runs allowed in 14 innings at SunTrust Park. And he has given up 3 home runs in his 16 games there. So
this explains Hector Neris's numbers, because Hector Neris is always, his numbers are always better than I think they're going to be comprehensively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I always
yeah.
think I'm going to go to his page and see a mess, and it's never quite as bad as you think. And I guess we're learning the reason is that there are several locations where Hector Neris just gets lit up. And one is Atlanta. One is apparently San Francisco, where he has an ERA over 8 in 8 games. And one is apparently Dodger Stadium, where he's appeared 6 times and has an ERA over 11. So that probably, you know, we're just seeing those games where yeah. where he's just yeah. getting... Everywhere else, it's pretty normal.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and you remember, I think, didn't he have like a back-to-back-to-back home run thing that happened in LA a couple of years ago where... I think he gave up 3 straight home runs when he was up by 3.
Right.
He must have.
Wasn't that right before, like, then he closed out a game successfully and, like, taunted the dugout, even though the Phillies
sucked? Oh, that's right.
And the Dodgers
Remember that?
Were the Dodgers, and the Dodgers players were like, come
what
on,
are you
man.
Doing? Are we really doing this?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, the Phillies.
He also sucks at AT&T Park, if it makes anyone feel better.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, the Phillies, 8.22 ERA.
After losing 2 out of 3 to Atlanta, coming off a 5-game winning streak, the 5th game of that winning streak was a blowout win in Atlanta, and then they start off hot on Saturday night, jump out to a quick lead, but then they do what they've been doing a lot this year, which is get out to some quick leads, and then just the engine stalls, and unfortunately, Pablo Sandoval, and the Phillies allowing pinch-hit home runs this year, I got to find that statistic too. They have allowed so many pinch-hit home runs this year, it's really staggering. Like, you're supposed to want to go after the pinch hitters. The pinch hitters are like the weaker part of your team, and the Phillies have not been able to avoid giving up crushing home runs to pinch hitters so far this year. And so, you know, we have seen in this week the best and worst of what this team can be. And I think that most fans are really having a hard time wrapping their minds around this team being any different than what it has been, because they have yet to show that they're any different. I mean, they've had 5-game winning streaks in these last couple of years. And as the piece I wrote for The Good Fight kind of pointed out, they have never been able to follow up 4-game series sweeps, or they've never been able to really follow up, aside from last year when they won 10 out of 11 and then went in the tank after that. They just can't sustain any success. It's the reason they're a 500 ball club. There's always something that's tripping them up. It's either a bullpen blow up, or it's a horrible defensive play. And one of the reasons the Phillies lost that game on Saturday was an error by Didi Gregorius, who's off to a terrible start defensively this year. Or it's an offense that is wildly inconsistent. Or you have a game on like Sunday night where, you know, you have your ace Aaron Nola coming out. And we're going to talk about Aaron Nola a little bit more in a minute, and he just can't get the job done in a game where you're on national TV and you have a chance to win the series and maybe get a little bit of the momentum back from Saturday night. So this was a very weird series in Atlanta this weekend. It felt like a play in three acts. Like the Phillies dominated Act One. It looked really good for most of Act Two, and then Atlanta pulled the rug out from under their feet, and then in Act Three, Atlanta dominated. And so what are some lessons we can take away from this? Is there anything to take away from this series, Justin, in Atlanta, where you've seen the Jekyll and the Hyde of this baseball team, which really this three-game series kind of encapsulates everything about this team really since the start of the Gabe Kapler era?
Well, I think you could take any three or four game chunk of this season and make that same argument. I mean, the winning streak this team put together before they got to Atlanta was discussed a series of one run games that were always winnable by the other team. And, you know, credit to the Phillies for holding off a one run lead, but in some cases they also allowed a not one run game to become a one run game. So yeah, I don't know what the best I don't know if we've seen the best version of this team yet. I hope we haven't, because they haven't put too many dominant wins really together. I know they had that, you know, you were talking about how they hadn't quite had a laugher yet, but then they managed to put one together against Atlanta, and yeah. You know, that was good to see. But yeah, at the same time, if you're going to score 12 runs in one game, I'd rather you spread that out over a couple of one-run wins, just like I'd rather you lose one game three times like they did on Saturday than lose three games individually. So yeah, I guess my takeaway here is what kind of felt like the worst part, and this is probably not the worst part, but what kind of felt like to me leaving that game was that it felt like a season-turning victory for Atlanta. It felt like...
Yeah.
I mentioned earlier, you know, Freddie Freeman started the season off pretty cold, and Demetrius Bell at Talking Chop said that he got handed his MVP award in a pregame ceremony after that, and he kind of remembered who he was, and then Freddie Freeman became Freddie Freeman again. It's sort of like that, but for the entire Braves. Like, the Phillies gave them a win that they can remember and feel good about. Clearly came to the ballpark the next day feeling good about, you know, oh, Andrew McCutchen led off with a home run. Who cares? It's one run. You know, we're the Braves. We're back. So it kind of felt like the Phillies handed the Braves a season-defining victory. And I think Matt Vasgersian even said that on Sunday Night Baseball. So that is probably, that to me feels like the most haunting aspect of this, that they had a game they could have won a couple of times, and then just won the series, even if they had lost the same game in Game 3 that they did. It feels like they kind of gave the Braves another morale boost, just like Freddie Freeman got, just like Gabe Kapler did when he took Aaron Nola out of the game on opening day. Like, if, yeah, last couple of years, the Braves have really had a lot of fun beating the Phillies. The Phillies have really been important to them, I feel like. They've been a real morale boost to Atlanta, and it just sucked to see that happen again.
Yeah, and there's something. I mean, I know Atlanta's a hard place to play, Liz, but, you know, I truly wonder how the Sunday night game would have worked out, how Aaron Nola would have fared on Sunday night if they'd managed to win the game on Saturday night. I mean, do you feel like, I always feel like there's no really, I really don't think momentum exists in baseball much of the time. At least, I haven't really seen momentum exist with the Phillies in quite some time. But it felt like there was a momentum shift from what happened on Saturday night, at least with Atlanta. I think the Phillies will probably go back to playing kind of some 500 ball, just like they have been. But, you know, do you feel like there was anything larger that we should take out of what happened this weekend in Atlanta?
I agree with Justin entirely, because it really feels like the Braves just remembered who they are. They just handed the Phillies their butts for two straight games. It was really unpleasant, because I went into Sunday after Saturday night feeling like they're going to lose this game. After the night before, it felt like, I mean, I was worn out. I hate feeling this way. At the end of that game, which was nearly 5 hours long, mm-hmm. I felt like I had wasted my time.
Yeah, I turned it. I didn't stick around to the end. I just, after the ninth inning, I said, nope, can't do anymore.
I didn't watch the entire thing. I checked out in the middle because they were winning. Mm-hmm. They were winning the game.
They're
and I thought,
the whole
all
way.
Right, I'm like, all right, it's not every, you know, I don't feel this way very often, but I'm like, I can go, you know, I can watch something else for an hour. And then I turn it back. I'm like, oh, the game is still happening. And I watched the rest. I think I tuned in the ninth, like at the the top of the ninth. And I just watched the rest of the game happen in front of my face, wondering if I should have just kept it on. And if I, of course, and the reason the Phillies were losing, because I stopped paying attention.
And, you know, in that game, like the Phillies coming back and going up 7-4, you know, that felt, I was like, okay, hey, look. And they didn't even like come back
there.
And, yeah, they didn't come back and just to get a one run lead. But, like, remember how they did that? That was two runs on a Bryce Harper fielder's choice. Like, that wasn't like, oh, yeah, like Real Muto hit a single and that allowed them to get that seventh run. But, like, it was just a fielder's choice by Bryce Harper. It wasn't like a big, epic, heroic Phillies moment. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't be sitting here complaining if the Phillies had won that game. But it's just kind of – it's just another one of those little signals of, like, even when this team wins, you're just kind of left kind of going, like, okay.
Yeah, right. It wasn't really – yeah. No, that's true. Like, it was the comeback or back to the pitcher that he threw over the head of the catcher and a couple runs scored on that play. And, you know, it was a situation where the Braves were trying to give the game back to the Phillies, and the Phillies bullpen, you know
– didn't want it.
Sort of feels like the Phillies are catching luckier breaks this year, and they still can't. They
still
can't
squander
exactly.
Them.
You know what I mean?
One lesson I'm going to take from this is if the Phillies pitch to Pablo Sandoval again, if they give him anything in the strike zone, they're morons. Because Pablo Sandoval has 4 pinch hit home runs this year. If the Braves put him in a game for the Phillies, I cannot imagine pitching to him after what happened last time.
I think they're all against the Phillies. Hasn't he hit 4 pinch hitters against the Phillies? He said definitely has 2.
It feels like
he's definitely
like
hit 2 pinch hit home runs against the Phillies. And that 1-2 fastball right down the middle, I'll just never understand. I mean, I don't mind throwing the fastball if you're going to elevate it in the zone, and maybe that's what JT Realmuto wanted. But man, oh man, that's not a pitch I'm throwing to Pablo Sandoval in that spot. Man.
It's the only
in a one-run game like that was.
It's the only time I'm advocating for putting runners on base. In during a save situation or whatever it is, you know, in a close game, it's the only time. But he is evil. That's the only thing I can guess. He's
that
evil.
Even your Giants stuff, it still lingers in his heart.
He's still around, and he's just bringing it with him wherever he goes.
I called it too. I mean, this wasn't a bold claim or anything, but when he came up in that inning, I was watching the game with some other people, and I said, like, he's gonna tag this one. Just watch, he's gonna see it, and look what happened. You know,
on the broadcast, they mentioned how many pinch hit home runs he had as he was walking into the box, and I thought, oh no.
Yeah. he's 2-for-5 against the Phillies this year. His home runs came against Aaron Nola and Hector Neris. He's 1-for-3 against Hector Neris. And yeah, I got to say, that's more than enough for me to pull the plug, you know? And I mean that, like, whether that means Joe Girardi just letting Sandoval get on base or literally just, like, hitting the fuse box with a bat and making the lights go out in the ballpark like they did, at the Mets game a couple days ago and just having to, you know, darn it. Like,
no.
Yeah. I guess the game's over. Nuts.
Yeah, 2's enough. You don't want to give him a chance to hit a third before the season turns 2 months old.
So what do the Phillies do here with the bullpen? What do they do with the closer situation? Because let me just, Neris is 1-3 with a 2.93 ERA. He's got 6 saves and 8 opportunities. He's allowed run in only 4 of his 13 appearances, but the 4 appearances in which he's allowed runs, obviously they're crushers because he's the closer. And so in 2 of his losses, he's allowed big home runs in that particular spot. But we don't have Archie Bradley. You know, we've seen the Jose Alvarado show. It can be quite thrilling, and it can also be quite a high wire act. Sam Coonrod, I think, he's good when he starts an inning, but he's not a guy you want to bring in the middle of an inning. So maybe a guy like Coonrod is a guy who gets a shot. You really hope that Archie Bradley comes off the DL or comes off the IL after the road trip here. But if you're Joe Girardi, I'm not sure what I do with Hector Neris at this point. I'm not sure that I make a change at closer because I don't love the options.
Are we back here again?
I have an idea. Let Matt Moore close.
What are you doing?
Oh, come on. You
What?
Poor
what
Matt Moore.
He's come back. That's not even a joke. He's come back from the injured list or walking around with a bucket on his head or wherever he was. And has he not looked pretty stellar since he's come back in a relief role? I think he has shown that, you know, maybe a pitcher like Matt Moore isn't worth trying to squeeze four innings out of, but one inning, you know, he can get three outs for you. And I mean, I don't expect
That's
Joe
fair.
Girardi to do anything dramatic. I don't think anybody is. So something like this is pretty much off the table. And I think it's kind of funny because maybe a couple weeks ago we were talking about how, like, the Phillies have Hector Neris, Sam Coonrod, Jose Alvarado, Archie Bradley, even Brandon Kinstler. They have all these options at closer, as if A, we wouldn't be having this conversation at any point this season, or B, Joe Girardi was actually going to be like, sure, roles don't matter and are just fluid, and let's just let anybody who wants to close pitch, like that was ever going to happen. I mean, at this point, someone using common sense would A, never pitch to Pablo Sandoval, and B, maybe try to seek out some help back there, or just try to give somebody another job, because, you know, Hector Neris is always a roll of the dice, especially in places like Atlanta or San Francisco or L.A., But I don't think, when you ask, like, what are the Phillies going to do here? I think mostly nothing, and except wait for Archie Bradley to come back. What they could do is try something like, why not? Why not put Matt Moore there? What are you going to do? Jose Alvarado? He doesn't know where the ball is going. Mm-hmm. He really does. Brandon Kinstler has, you know, been less effective than when we were bringing his name up before. Maybe Coonrod, you know, but he's also just one of these hard throwers who can lose control, as he did when he hit Ronald Acuna in the finger. Part of that was Acuna's swing, but still. You know, I don't, what can they do is just, yeah, I don't know. Wait for Bradley at this point.
In the three games Matt Moore has pitched since he has returned.
Uh-oh.
He has a 3.0 ERA.
That's pretty good.
Okay. It's not bad. All right. He's faced a total of 12 batters.
Love it.
And pitched three innings. So I'm going to say maybe we need a little bit more time. I don't know if I'm willing. I mean,
we don't have time. I mean, we have no time. Are you kidding me?
I mean,
we're gonna sit around and experiment with these five guys again, watch Jose Alvarado take somebody's head off in the fourth row. Like, come on.
The good news here is that the Phillies are absolutely going to do nothing, and so we're gonna get that time no matter what. They're absolutely going to do nothing here, because I feel like they're at least there's someone new around. At least there's Dombrowski. But I feel like organizationally there might be a little bit of fear. They might be freezing after what happened last year, considering that they did some stuff. They got some guys from outside, and it only got worse every single thing they did. So I don't necessarily blame them for waiting a little bit longer before doing anything drastic, considering the most recent thing that's happened to them. I'd let it go like another 7 days, maybe 10. And if things still suck, then it's time to, you know, by then maybe Matt Moore will have a few more innings. Two, maybe two more. That's all I'm looking for. I'm not looking for a lot.
I'll be honest, I thought you were going to read some way worse statistics.
I know, I thought I was going to. I actually thought I was going to find something better. I thought, I mean, a three ERA, it's totally fine. That's fine for a reliever. You don't want to see that from your closer, which is why I'm like, it's three games. If he pitches another, you know, two more clean innings somehow, his ERA will be down even further, and it will look like a closer. And five innings, if he, you know, allowed that few runs, it might be, you know, it's worth maybe a try putting him in, you know, to save one game, or at least at the end of a game. You know, doesn't even have to be a particularly close one.
And I mean, you are right. I'm just at this point, I want to start pushing buttons and turning dials, and it is early and all that
yes.
stuff.
No,
but
it's not
at the
early
same
anymore.
Time, this is what the Hector Neris, this is what he does. This is our Hector Neris conversation every year, is when are we going to make a change? How do we make a change? It always comes right after some kind of disaster. But as we just were discussing, those disasters tend to be isolated in particular areas. So
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we're just do it. Maybe this conversation is also very normal.
Well, this is Hector. This with Hector Neris, Saturday night is baked into the cake. You just know that with the whole Hector Neris experience, most of the time, 85% of the time, maybe 90% of the time, Hector Neris is going to probably get the job done. It's going to look really ugly most nights. He's going to make you sweat through your baseball cap as you watch him. But he's going to get through it most of the time. But he's going to have three, four, five games where he doesn't just pitch poorly. He absolutely crushes your soul with a game-tying or game-losing home run. I mean, it's just... This is part of the Hector experience. We know this. It's baked into the cake, right? So the question is, okay, do you have someone better? In which case, yeah, then you can use Hector in the seventh or eighth inning, which is, I think, where he's a little bit better. I think that's where he'd be better anyway. And in my mind, that's why you went and got Archie Bradley this offseason. That's one of the reasons why you spent big money on the one relief pitcher you spent big money on. I don't want to turn over the closer role to one of the bargain guys like Alvarado and Coonrod you were hoping to get lucky on. And so far, you've probably got your money's worth out of those two guys. I want to give it if and when it becomes time to remove Hector Neris from the closer's role. And again, I'm with you, Justin. I'd be fine if it happened today, tomorrow, whatever. But I don't want to remove him for Alvarado or Coonrod because I think you're going to get a pretty similar experience. I'm removing him for Archie Bradley. And that's the guy that I think, you know, after the road trip's over, there's talk that he's going to be back after that. I think if there's another stumble, he's the next guy in line because that's why you gave him the big money this offseason. And that's the guy that I would go with. And I wouldn't waste a second in moving over to Archie Bradley at that point. So, I don't know. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit more about the game on Sunday and talk the Phillies offense and what things are looking like moving forward here. You know, what is going on with this baseball team? We'll talk about it coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. I thought one of the really more interesting statistics that I saw over the course of the weekend, Liz, I think you posted this on the Slack. It was a tweet that Paul Boyer sent out. When we're looking at what the Phillies offense did over the last week or so, again, jumping out to some big leads early, but they seem to put it on cruise control and forget that they still actually, you know, need to have a hand on the wheel once they get an early lead. He looked on Baseball Savant and noted that the Phillies have the majors' worst batting average, on base percentage, slugging percentage, and weighted on base average when batting with a multi-run lead. And it's not even that close. They have a 237 WOBA when they have a multi-run lead. They're hitting 175 as a team when they have a multi-run lead with a slugging percentage of 267 and an on-base percentage of 252. I don't know what it is about this offense where they just go into this deep funk whenever they seem to get a big lead, but that's why Friday night's game seemed so weird because it was a laugher. We haven't seen many of those. We've seen this team score a bunch of runs early, but in that five-game winning streak, every game they got off to a big lead, and like you said, Justin, the middle relievers let the teams get back in, let the Brewers get back into it, only to fall one run short. And this lineup continues to be frustrating as all get out because you've gotten Rhys Hoskins, a guy who was so hot 2 weeks ago, doing the Rhys Hoskins thing once again. The crazy roller coaster of the ups and downs of Rhys Hoskins. He's still doing this nonsense. It's so old. Now he's not doing his leg kick anymore, going with a toe tap because he lost his timing. Man, get it together. Like, seriously, enough already. Get it together. It's ridiculous that this happens year after year with the guy that he can't get his leg kicked down. Bryce Harper is playing at an MVP level, and then he gets hurt. This is just something that happens with Harper during the course of every year since he's been here. Suffers some kind of weird freakish injury. Yeah, you get hit in the face, but it's actually the ball hits him on the wrist, and that's turned out to be probably the injury that's hurt him more than anything else, and he hasn't done much since he's come back. And Alec Bohm has struggled this entire season. It looked like maybe he was starting to come out of it, and then he goes back into a tailspin. Didi Gregorius has been hot and cold. I mean, really, there's been Gene Segura and JT Realmuto are the only two guys that have been consistent all year. Thankfully, Andrew McCutchen's come around again. That's been really encouraging to see. He's starting to get on base at the top of the lineup again. I didn't see that coming, so that's great news. But there's just this offense has yet to click with everybody running all at the same time, Justin, and it's really starting to it shows in their lack of production. Even during the course of a game, they're streaky during the course of a game. which I think is really hard to do. I mean, how can you get off to such a quick start in so many games, and then it just and then they just die? And I don't understand it. I can't understand how most teams, they get better the more they face a pitcher during the course of a game. You know, the second time through, third time through the order, most offenses get better. The Phillies get worse the more they see a pitcher. That's just beyond me.
They just seem bummed. I mean, it's a lack of cohesion. And when you say, like, I don't know how to explain it, there's kind of nothing we can do to explain it. Like, at this point, you're talking about, I mean, you said how you're not a big believer in momentum. I kind of believe that there's a difference between showing up at the park the day after a big win or a cool win and showing up at the park on Sunday after the Phillies lost to the Braves that we keep talking about. Like, there is a difference, I think, in the mindset. I think Phillies hitters have really struggled, and pitchers have struggled with this in recent years in the mental skills department. I mean, some of these guys, most of these guys that we're talking about are veterans, and like their approach is probably, you know, well-worn at this point. But when things get all junked up like this and everything's distorted and no one can hit at the same time, I don't know. There's just nobody you can rely on except JT. I mean, and he's hitting in fewer games than like your Hoskins and your even your Alec Bohms and Didi's and McCutcheon's, because, you know, he gets rest days where Knapp plays for him. So he doesn't even have 100 at bats on the season yet. But he's got a .313 batting average. He's got like 11 extra base hits. I mean, you know, he's steady. Real Muto is steady, and that's exactly what the Phillies don't have in their other eight hitters, except for Segura, who has just been a monster. He just, you know, they lost him for, what, 2 weeks. So that was a big deal as well. So in a league where you know your best hitter is only ever one misplaced fastball away from missing significant time, you got to have more than two guys in your lineup who are able to get their bat on the ball regularly, and the Phillies just don't have that. So as far as explaining it goes, I mean, maybe somebody can do a deep dive into this and explain it statistically, but in my mind, it's definitely more of a mindset thing. It's definitely more of an emotional thing. I mean, Hoskins is tinkering with his swing already in the season. I mean, he's doing that in the off season. He's doing that in the middle of the season. Bryce Harper's okay, and then he gets hit in the face with a pitch. I mean, like, this is what we're talking about. These are the X factors and the finagling, and I think there's just a lack of cohesion with this offense, because a lot of these guys, they just get to the plate and they just can't mentally wrap their heads around what they're trying to do. And you're right. It's great to see. I honestly didn't expect to see Andrew McCutcheon make such a dramatic turnaround these past few days. And it has only been, you know, a few days, but it's been great. Every time he hits a home run in that leadoff spot, it makes everybody feel good, because I know everybody's pulling for Andrew McCutcheon, and for good reason. So that is good news. But yeah, I don't know. The only thing I can point to is like mental approach when they get up there and they're psyching themselves out and they're pushing. And I think that's certainly true for one guy in Bohm, because he's the youngest one of the group and he's eager to get back on track. And he had such a great 2020. And, you know, it's just not clicking for him right now. I think anywhere on the field all of the time. So, yeah, I don't know what they need. Maybe they need more orange slices from Joe Girardi in between innings. You know, maybe they need a cooler full of Capri Suns in the dugout. Maybe they need to, like, go out on the town and have a nice dinner together. I don't know. But, like, something's missing, because this team just can't get on the same page.
I will say, I'm sorry, I just want to say, Andrew McCutcheon, since the beginning of May, is hitting .364.
Is this what the show's going to be? I say something vague and ambiguous. Liz comes in with the actual stats.
No, I'm sorry. I was
the actual stats.
You said it. No, you said it. And both times that you said it, I was genuinely curious. I'm like, I should look this up.
I'm sorry. And that's how long that he's had a .364 batting average? What was the time frame?
Since the beginning of May.
Nine games.
Beginning of May. All right.
Nine games.
I mean, see.
I looked it up because I thought, how long has it been? Because I remember him starting to pick it up, you know, like a couple of weeks ago, because I thought it had been longer. And so I'm like, I'd like to find out whether I'm right. And then I did.
Yeah, where he took a benching when the team was in St. Louis. And ever since he got back in the lineup, he has been tearing the cover off the ball. Did you guys see he was when he was mic'd up? In the game on Sunday night, where he's talking to himself as he's rounding the bases, just like that, baby. Like I said, I'm the best. I love it. It was fantastic. And he tweeted after the game. He's like, you know, he didn't mean that in a cocky way. He believes in positive self-talk and all that kind of stuff. So
home run. Who would blame him for saying that?
Yeah.
Kutch, if anybody, if cockiness is your biggest sin on this team right now, like, we will take that gladly with a standing ovation.
Well, I will tell you that what this team reminds, they remind me so much of the like the 2005 and 2006 Phillies. Those Phillies teams right before they figured out how to win in 2007. Like, I just remember there were so many times during the course of those two seasons where it felt like, oh man, this team's figured it out. This team's figured it out. They have a big three-game sweep, or they've won five in a row, six in a row, five out of, you know, six out of eight or something like that. They're going to really turn it around now. Oh, they're going to use this huge comeback win as a springboard or something like that. And it never happened, and it didn't happen. Like, they couldn't sustain it. They just couldn't sustain success. And it was the difference between them being a playoff team and not a playoff team until in 2007, something finally clicked. And, you know, I don't know what it was in 2007 that finally made it all click, but it did. It just kind of happened. There was a Mets collapse that helped, but certainly the team itself really played red hot baseball. And we've been waiting, I think, for this version of the Phillies to do something like that. For one of these players to just say, climb on my back and I'm gonna carry us for a while. We've seen Bryce Harper do it for maybe a week or 2 week stretch here and there, but no one else on the Phillies has been able to do that offensively. And we kind of knew going into the season that the strength of this team was going to have to be offense. And I know offense is down all across baseball. That's just kind of the way the sport is right now. But the Phillies can't afford to be to have a down offense. They can't afford to be like every other team in baseball because the defense is so bad and because there is a lot of uncertainty in the back of the rotation and because the bullpen is still very much a work in progress, as we've seen. So they really needed the offense to produce in order to be successful. So that's what I keep thinking about is this 2005 and 2006 team. And is there going to be something that clicks it into gear for this 2021 version of the Phillies? And there's still plenty of time for them to figure it out. I mean, really in 2007 and 2008, in the beginning of those seasons, the Phillies played very much like this. It was very much a 500 team. It was very much them struggling to get more than two, three, four games over 500. And so it's a long season, but it's frustrating to watch a 500 team that just keeps shooting itself in the foot.
We've been waiting for the Phillies to figure it out for a while now, stretching back to several years. And like, I don't disagree. They definitely feel like those teams. That would make me feel better if I knew for a fact that some success was coming somewhere and that they would definitely figure it out. Because the longer it takes them to get to a place where they're playing with any kind of consistency, where it feels like they're connected, everyone feels like they're playing their own separate game of baseball. Everyone feels like they're just, no one feels like they're connected and they're playing together. I don't know what it is, but everyone just feels separate. You know, the longer we wait for them to figure it out, the less confident I am that they will, you know?
There's no edge. There's just no edge
exactly
to this team.
When they, like, there was no doubt in my mind that they were going to lose Sunday night. I turned the game off at one point because I'm like, you know what? Life is too short. I think if they win this game, I'll wake up tomorrow and look at the highlights and be like, wow, that was cool. And if they don't, I would have given myself back an hour at least.
You know, this is why people got so on board with Jose Alvarado, because that, when you talk about not having an edge, like, that was the closest thing to an edge. People had seen for a long time, and it was against the Mets, and you didn't know what was happening. You were just like, yeah, sure, dude. You struck Dom Smith out. Let's start a fight. Absolutely. Why not? John, you mentioned, you know, not having a guy who can be like, I'll just carry us for a little while. For me, like, a little, this isn't quite the same thing, but I always credit, when you talk about those 05, 06 teams, the moment that snapped me back into paying attention to the Phillies on a regular basis was Aaron Rowan's catch. And I know that was in 2006, and it was early in 2006, and they didn't go to the playoffs in 2006. So this theory
is... It actually happened, like, tomorrow, like,
see,
on this day in history.
I was going to say, yes. Tomorrow is the 15th anniversary of Aaron Rowan's catch, as luck would have it. But that was a moment that everyone remembers that for me just kind of made the team relevant. And they were in the middle of a stretch where they won 13 of 14 when he made that catch. They swept the Marlins. They swept the Braves. They swept the Giants. They won 2 out of 3 from the Mets and then swept the Reds. Like, that's a hot team. Then they went ahead and lost 10 of their next 15, which is, you know, the problem we're talking about with this team, which is why there's so, you know, there's so much parallel there. But I guess my point just is that, like, it wasn't so much a guy saying, "I'll carry us." It was more like just a big, historic, nationally recognized moment that happened in a Phillies game and didn't happen to the Phillies. It was something good the Phillies did that got that much attention and just kind of, I don't know, it got my attention. I feel like I was probably not the only one. And for some reason, I always, even though it was in 2006, I always credit that with, like, the beginning of things turning around in Philadelphia. And I know other people can credit, like, the 10,000th loss as the thing that kind of turned it around. Not so much because the players were like, we're gonna like make this not our reputation anymore. The players didn't really care. They were like, we didn't lose all those games, but to fans, you know, we latched onto that. And that was in July 2007. And everything that happened after that was great. That was just another funny, like, throwback moment where we all kind of, like, oh, culturally came together, and then the Phillies just were good after that. That doesn't factor in as much because it wasn't like a play on the field. But yeah, I just go back to the Rowan thing because this team hasn't really had moments like that in the past few years. I know we point to the Bryce Harper walk-off grand slam against the Cubs because that's really, it's really kind of a standalone thing. You know, like, that we've seen some great pitching performances from the guys at the top of this rotation. You know, we've seen a couple of cool wins and stuff. But when you think about moments like that from the past few years, that's really the only one that pops into your head. And that's what this team's been missing. And I think that does feed into your argument that there's been no edge. There's been no, you know, milestones. There's been no legacy for this team yet. Yeah. And part of that is what we were talking about before, a lack of cohesion, you know, a lack of, I don't think this is a word, teamliness. And I think until you get that, yeah, you're going to have a loose collection of parts. You know, Joe Girardi dumps on the field out of a wheelbarrow. Sometimes it all comes together. Sometimes it doesn't. And that's how you make a 500 baseball team.
Oh. Yeah, I think what we're talking about here is a baseball team where the offense and the starting pitching and the bullpen are shockingly all playing well at the same time, which
or passively some of them playing well and some of them just being passable. Like that's what we talked about with the bullpen. Yeah. Give us a passable bullpen and this offense will carry it. Well, guess what? It's a different year. It's not the 2020 team, even though they brought back pretty much everybody from that team. It's just a different team for whatever reason.
I want to finish up with Aaron Nola because, again, on Sunday night baseball, ESPN, nationally televised game, the Phillies have a chance to get back a little bit of momentum. And unfortunately, Aaron Nola, who we all love on this podcast, gives up 4 runs in the first inning and really just doesn't give the team a chance after that. Gives up a Freddie Freeman home run after that, throws the fewest pitches of his career, pulled after 4 innings. And from then on, you could just tell the Phillies offense was not going to get anything going in that game outside of Andrew McCutchen's leadoff home run. And so the narrative about Aaron Nola is still out there, and everybody's got their different definitions of what an ace is, what a number one starter is. I guess the question for us, and I kind of, you know, if you had to pick a starter to start a wild card game for the Phillies, and all three were well rested, where would you rank the top 3 Phillies starters in terms of your confidence level to start a wild card game for you, Liz?
I'd say right now, it's really tough to pick between Wheeler and Nola because they've actually, to me, felt like, and I've actually not looked at the stats, that they've had fairly parallel seasons. Like they've both thrown.
Last year they did for sure.
Like in this year, they've both thrown a complete game or a shutout, maybe. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember. They both have followed up great starts with real terrible ones. At least twice, I think. If not, probably twice each. So it really would depend on who had the last good start, because I'd probably go with the guy who had the last bad start. Considering
the last good start.
No. They tend to alternate after.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I see
starts,
what you're saying.
They
okay.
tend to deliver bad ones. I'd go with the guy who last had his worst, had a bad start. I don't know. Because what other way can I split them? Because they've both had similar successes and similar stumbles this year.
I got to say, I think I'd probably go with Wheeler right now. I'd go with Wheeler, then Nola, then Eflin. And I don't want that to be an insult to Eflin because I'm really encouraged by how well he's pitched this year. But if we're talking about a one-game playoff right now, I mean, look, I maintain, you know, Aaron Nola is an ace. But, you know, there has definitely been moments where he's come up small on days where the team really needed a win. And
yeah,
that's exactly what happened on Sunday. I mean, that was a huge bummer. To like, I turned that game on and they're down 4-0. And you're like, it was supposed to be like, oh, no, but Nola's starting tomorrow. You're going to get a deep start. You're going to get a good start. And the Phillies are going to have a chance. And just to like right out the gate like that, it was just like, oh, come on, Aaron. Like on a day like this, like it's one of these starts. And yeah, I feel like if your season's on the line, I don't know. For some reason, I have more trust in Wheeler right now. But Liz is right that like it tends to alternate.
See, and I even think, and you know me, I've always been the low man on Zach Eflin, but his 7 starts this year, 3.38 ERA, 1.13 WHIP, 42 strikeouts, 3 walks.
Ooh.
For Zach Eflin so far this year. I mean, my goodness. If you look at the Fangraphs numbers, Zach Eflin leads all Phillies pitchers in FWAR 1.5, Aaron Nola 1.4, Zach Wheeler 1.3. I mean, it's like, these guys are so close together. Zach Wheeler has the best ERA of the bunch at 2.83. Aaron Nola's ERA up to 3.59. But you look at the FIP, Aaron Nola has a lower FIP than Zach Wheeler because he's better with the strikeouts. I mean, it's really hard to choose. I agree with you, Justin. I would probably – I think Zach Wheeler is just throwing the ball a little bit more consistently than Aaron Nola. I think I think Eflin is real, real close. I go back to last September when the Phillies really were struggling down the stretch, the guy who was giving them the best starts was Zach Eflin as opposed to Aaron Nola. And I'll be the first to admit, with Zach Eflin, I was wrong about him. He is as good as everyone was thinking he could be this year. I hope he keeps it up because he's been the three of those guys. They have 3 of the top 6 Fangraphs wins above replacement in the National League. Like among the top 6, there are 3 Phillies pitchers.
I mean,
there.
Let's just stop and not to derail you, John. Let's just stop and acknowledge that for a second. Like,
yes,
we're having this conversation,
awesome.
And I went into sad voice mode talking about Nola's start on Sunday because that was a bummer of a start.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, they have 3 of the best pitchers in the National League in this rotation, and that's not something I expected to be able to say about this team. And I think it's, you know, when you look at the positives and negatives, this has just been a huge, huge positive.
And I
think it gets overlooked. I mean, it gets overlooked because, yeah, you know, you see this team lose and you think, okay, why? But when they win, all you think is it's a win. And you don't look to assign blame for a win, which I guess you would call credit in that, you know, case of a positive. But you'll have to forgive me for not being as well-versed in that terminology. My point being, yeah, they have three of the best starters in the NL right now. And also, like, we have been talking ad nauseum about how many of these guys didn't pan out for the Phillies. And finally, we're talking about Zach Eflin.
Yes.
In a way.
Yes.
It's like, oh my God. Like,
he's great.
He really is amazing.
Vindication. I remember years ago, I talked about him, and I remember because he had a facial hair at the time that made him look like Zorro.
I remember.
Yes.
That
was, I've been on the Zach Eflin train since,
yes, you have.
I mean, I remember podcasting about him in my tornado apartment.
That's
a
right.
Long time
That's
ago.
Right. I remember you talking about him. I do.
Yes.
I do. You're right.
Him,
you're right.
Him being great is my favorite thing so far this season. But you're both right. The rotation has been outstanding, which only makes the rest of the flaws only seem bigger because it sucks that Aaron Nola gave up those runs in the first inning. But it felt like a loss. Because mm-hmm. when the Phillies are turned over, they're like turtles. They can't get back up. They have a tough time doing it sometimes. Like, and on Saturday, they managed to come back, and I was genuinely surprised. You know, they surprised me.
Liz, I have to say, you just mentioned turtles, and I know that's a common comparison for you, whether it was the Phillies entirely or just Matt Klentak looking like a turtle.
You're
a
right.
I don't know if I ever told you this, but I passed that comparison, you know, by you along to Angelo Cataldi, who loved it. Just so you know.
Yeah. That's right. I remember that.
I did not know that. That is great. I'm glad. That made
you guys
my
you guys are buds now.
My comparisons are famous.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that should be able to come back. This is a team that should be able, you know, if the bullpen is not going to be great, the offense has to be able to come back and protect Aaron Nola from his bad starts. They have to be able to do that. And I hate that it felt like a loss the other night. It just, that was the worst part, is that the runs were on the board, and I pretty much knew. I'm like, if they win, I'll be as genuinely surprised as I was last night when they almost won, and then not surprised when they didn't.
Well, I think the off day on Monday couldn't have come at a better time. And now the Phillies head to Washington to take on a Nationals team that's been up and down. The entire division's been up and down. The Phillies go into the series a game behind the Mets. They're a half a game ahead of Atlanta still. Miami and Washington are both about three back. And so it's still a division that is really underwater. And nobody has gotten a foothold yet in the division. Everybody's got similar problems so far. So the Phillies start a three-game series against the Nationals here in Nationals Park in Washington, starting on Tuesday night. As we wrap up this episode of the podcast, gang, any final thoughts, Justin, from you?
First thing, the Dirty Innings episode about the Phillies' rivalry with Major League umpires will be this week, which is in a lot of ways an infuriating episode.
Oh, God, now I can't. Now I'm so excited.
The other thing I want to mention is while you guys were talking, I was doing some back-of-the-napkin math, so God only knows how accurate this is, but I'm confident enough to at least say it. Hector Neris in any ballpark that isn't Philadelphia, Atlanta, L.A., or San Francisco. 279 ERA in 95 innings. In Atlanta, L.A., and San Francisco, 867 ERA in 27 innings.
Oh, my goodness.
So I think we stumbled onto something here.
Yes, I think we just need to keep him away from certain places. And he's just going to have to, you know, the team needs Hector, but not in San Francisco, Los Angeles, or Atlanta. So we'll just we'll find another way around that, Hector. All right, Liz, any final thoughts from you?
I hope everyone enjoyed the stats in this episode. I'm about to throw out a few more, and I hope everyone enjoys it because it probably won't happen again. So the Phillies, their longest win streak this year is 5 games. It was 5 games last year. When was the last time the Phillies had a longer winning streak than that?
I want to say, what it was, like 6 or longer, you're saying?
Yeah, 6 or longer.
Wait, didn't they win 10 of 11 last year?
Yeah, but it was like 5, and they lost, and then they won another 5.
Right, math. Something simple like that. Math, right. Yeah.
I'm going to say 2016, Liz.
It's 2015. When was their longest before that? And how many do you think?
Oh.
I actually looked this up, so I'll let Justin try to guess. I know this one, actually.
I feel like
I looked this one up for the article I was writing.
Too obvious to say 2011, but I guess I will because they won over 100 games, but that doesn't feel right.
It was
Liz, let me take a crack.
Go ahead.
It was 2012 when they won 7 in a row, right?
They won 9. They won
in 2012?
In 2012, they won 9 in a row.
Wow.
Oh, is it 9? Wow.
I'm going to double check because now I'm worried the way that, because John, you said you looked it up and the way you're reacting.
Yeah, when I was writing the piece for the Good Fight this week, I thought I was looking for winning streaks.
Oh, no, you're right. I went back to 2011 and looked at that. You're right. It's 7.
Okay.
Yes.
And 7 is still, hey, you know, 7's still amazing, but, you know, it's a full week of winning, which, you know, we haven't seen here in quite a long
time. This Phillies team should be able to win 7 games in a row a couple of times, frankly.
I would think.
I was genuinely.
$200 million roster.
I was genuinely shocked when I looked back and saw that the Phillies hadn't, like, it's just been 5 games, and then they won 6, and then they're back to 5. They haven't, they've had a winning streak longer than 5 games just once, like in the past 5 or 6 years. I feel like that's a long time, especially since this team, even a 500 team, you think they'd be able to break off maybe 6 or 7 once. But yeah, I was shocked when I saw that. I'm hoping that maybe this year they'll be able to get to 6. What do you guys think? 6? Too much to ask?
I think they'll get 6 at some point, but then I think they'll probably follow it up by losing 3 series in a row after that. So you
I mean, it's a long season. There's a lot of steps forward and a lot of steps backward yet to take.
A lot of that to do before we end up exactly where we started.
Well, that's a pretty good way to end episode number 472 of the podcast of this frustrating baseball team that we watch day in and day out. So, but folks, make sure you continue to check out thegoodfight.com for all the latest news and notes and stuff coming out of the Philadelphia Phillies. And Check out our Hittin' Season Patreon. We've got so much great stuff up there. You guys that have been coming over to the Patreon, we are so appreciative of your support, and we hope you enjoy all the extra bonus podcasts and video stuff that we're doing there for you. Go to patreon.com/hittin'season and sign up on one of the tiers that we have there. Also, tell your friends about the Good Fight podcast feed at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is that you get your podcasts. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time on Hittin' Season.